There we go. So I'm Rick Hansen, and I believe this is June 1st, 2016. And I'm really happy to be here. First, I just want to go back to the meditation. This year, we're doing an exploration of mindfulness. Today and maybe next week or two, I want to kind of wrap up the first of the four establishments or foundations or applications or locations of mindfulness that the Buddha recommended, the first one being mindfulness of the body. And to that end, as you know, I suggested in the meditation, summarizing the Buddha's basic suggestions about mindfulness of breathing, that first we establish a sustained presence of mind or steadiness of awareness of breathing itself in a very kind of simple way, and then broaden the field of attention, second, to include the whole body as a field of awareness as we breathe. And then third, gradually move into what the Buddha called tranquilizing the bodily formations. Or it is said that he said. Basically, it means bringing a quality of tranquility to the body and, of course, to the qualities of emotion and thought that the body's involved with. Okay, so steadiness of mind to breathing. Second, widening to include the whole body as you breathe. And third, gradually relaxing and tranquilizing mind, body, and heart. Okay. Any questions about those methods for meditation? Yeah?
Is the tranquilizing an outcome of the first two?
That's very natural. Yeah, very nice. Is tranquilizing an outcome of the first two? It's interesting that he offers suggestions as a teacher, a yogi himself, with no disrespect meant, Coach Buddha, you know, explaining how to do something. He does locate the tranquilizing process as something in the sequence of instructions that's around the third or fourth step. Technically, there's a specific sutta or sutra about mindfulness of breathing that describes essentially 16 steps. The later steps tend to be more about deep, concentrated states of meditative awareness. But the first several, thank you very much, some brain candy returned. Anyway, the first several are in the sequence I described. And that's also my experience as well, that relaxation grows out of this sense of awareness of the body as a whole. Technically, that awareness of the body as a whole likely involves networks on the sides of the brain, so-called lateral networks, which tend to pull us out of and inhibit and de-energize networks in the midline of the brain that are more problem-solving oriented in the front or more spacing out, ruminating, daydreaming default network in the back. And so in that way, that awareness of the body as a whole, as we breathe, does tend to promote relaxation. It's also true, of course, that it's circular. That's why I refer to a kind of spiraling as we go deeper and deeper, because as we relax, it's easier to sustain steadiness of mind. We're not so stressed out, we're not so rattled, our sympathetic nervous system is not so activated, which tends to promote distractibility and a kind of skittering of attention, searching here and there for something to fear or something to want, right, or something to cling to. And so, it all kind of works together. I like to do it in the way I described. I try to establish a base of steadiness and then take it to account the body as a whole. With practice, you move through the steps fairly quickly, and then boom, you're more and more into tranquility and calm and this kind of global sense of just sitting, being present in the moment, nothing to want, no problem to solve, nothing to defend against, no trouble in the mind, now. Continuously. And then your mind wanders, and then you come back, and it gets deeper and deeper each time. Great. Another question or two about this, and then I'm going to move into the next part of my presentation here.
So the steadiness of mind, does the brain literally stop? Do the firing of neurons that produce thoughts, do they literally slow down?
That's really interesting. One of the times the brain is most metabolically active is while we're sleeping. The body's very quiet. We're in a different state of mind. But the neurological activity can be really quite strong. And one thing that's struck scientists about this is that in all kinds of states of mind, including deep relaxation, the overall level of metabolic activity varies only pretty slightly within a fairly tight range. So the neural activity pattern globally isn't so much the target. It's what kind of neural activity. And which then goes to, what I'll be getting into more in my talk tonight about somatic markers and awareness of the body. What can start to happen is that as the body relaxes, we're getting less and less signal from it in terms of tension or desire. Also, as we relax and come into the body, there's a thing called reciprocal inhibition. In other words, as we come more into nonverbal sensation, somatic awareness, that tends to disengage verbal activity in the mind. So there's less and less of that chattering away with, the pluses and minuses of that. So that does tend to happen as well. And then I think also as we tend to, just kind of establish ourselves here in our seat, meditating away, or however we meditatively practice, there is a growing sense often of enoughness, fullness. I talk about the green zone, what actually is the condition of a body altogether, especially its nervous system, and particularly the headquarters of the nervous system, the brain. What's going on in the body and the nervous system and the brain when there's less and less sense of craving? There's less and less sense of fear or frustration or heartache, more and more sense of peace and contentment and love. I've talked about this. And as we rest in that sense of fullness already, no trouble, there too, I think, a sense of agitation and mental activity that's problematic diminishes. And there's honestly more and more of a sense of kind of the fertile noise of the space of possibility of just awareness that could represent anything that might come along. And we kind of abide more and more as that sort of spaciousness itself without, being troubled ourselves or being troubled to anyone else. All that may sound kind of esoteric, but I'm really trying to make it, concrete and close to our experience. That's kind of how it is, I think. Yeah? Okay. And you can kind of feel it. We all know the difference between the mind's chattering away, the verbal track, the yapping away versus relatively quiet in that regard. We can all feel the difference between a sense of tension or tense defendedness or tense drivenness. Either way, there's a sense of tension or pressure versus a sense of, enoughness already. It may not be a perfect moment. We're dealing with challenges perhaps, but we meet them with coming from an embodied quality of fullness and calm and feeling resourced, as we step into the next moment. Okay? As Suzuki Roshi said, enlightenment is, I always love sentences that start, enlightenment is, those are the ones I want to pay attention to, especially when they come from Zen masters like Suzuki Roshi. It says, enlightenment is letting go of this moment while growing into the next one. Continually. I added the word continually. I think English was not his first language. There are very few adverbs in his books, which are from his talks. I'm reading right now a wonderful collection of talks called Not Always So. Extremely accessible. Just sucks you right into his mind stream, which is a beautiful place to be compared to Fox News. But I won't go there. Anyway, Suzuki Roshi. Back to Suzuki Roshi, Rick. Channel changing. Suzuki Roshi. Here we are. Beautiful place to be. Anyway, okay. I recommend his book, Not Always So. Very thin, super sweet, a lot of super short chapters, beautiful book. Okay, onward. So I want to talk about somatic markers. Somatic markers, fancy term, apparently first used by Antonio Damasio. He's written a number of books about, including a beautiful book called, I think it's called The Feeling of Being, or he says, The Feeling of What Happens. There we are. That's exactly right. And so it's this basic idea that I'm going to broaden here a little bit, that if you just see, experience, ordinary experience. Right now you're having experiences. That's the good news. If you weren't having experiences, that'd be a problem, right? Think of the alternative to having experience, you know? So you're having experience. And to put it kind of simply, I think experience is a little bit like a song that has different tracks. Now, obviously, the distinctions among tracks are a little artificial, but from the standpoint of being mindful of the fullness of experience, I think it's helpful to be aware of all six of these tracks. One track is, I'll call it the thought track, which does include verbal activity, but it also includes imagery, memory, perspectives, frames of reference, models of relationship, paradigms of relationship, what therapists might call object relations. That's loosely the territory of thought, broadly defined. The second track in this kind of model I'm using, other people use this framework more or less as well, is perception. The sounds we hear, the sights we see, including sensation, which, for example, includes the sensations of the body breathing. That's the perception track. Okay? Third major track, emotion, both passing feelings and lasting moods, emotion. Then we have the fourth track in this kind of framework I use. I'll call it desire, neutrally. That includes our values, our aspirations, our dreams, our standards, our principles, our ethics. It also includes our cravings, our wishes, our addictions, desire, purposes, intentions, all the field of desire. Wise intention is in the field of desire. Okay? And then we have the fifth track, which is action. Subtle forms of action, such as the embodied sense of posture or facial expression, the knowledge how to do various things, or the experience of what it's like to reach for a cup or walk, pull back from, you know, someone who's giving you a weird vibe, you know, all the rest of that. And then the sixth track is awareness. Awareness is an aspect of experience. If there is experience, there is awareness. I prefer the word awareness to consciousness. Consciousness has a lot of associations and basically two meanings. People use the word consciousness to describe experience altogether, and they also use the word consciousness to refer to awareness. And it's kind of confusing sometimes which term, you know, you're using. How are you using this term? So, okay, roughly mindful of all those aspects and the ways in which they have some fundamental attributes. They have certain properties, if you will, their nature. The nature of all six of those aspects of experience is that they are transient. They're changing, increasing, decreasing, vibrating, altering. They're impermanent, including awareness itself. Awareness changes as we wake up, as we fall asleep, as we narrow the field of attention, as we broaden it, as we take LSD, what have you. You know, awareness can change, as well as other aspects of experience. Second major characteristic, experience has many parts to it. Even these aspects of experience can be subdivided further, and those parts can be subdivided further. And then we have the third characteristic, which is that no one's running the show. There's no entity inside that is like the auteur, the great screenwriter, director, camera person, and all the rest of that, who's producing and making the movie frame by frame, second by second, quarter second by quarter second. In that sense, there's no self inside in that narrow notion of this unified, independent, and unchanging agent of action and owner of experience. Okay? All right? Three characteristics. A fourth characteristic kind of follows, which is if you fight those three characteristics, you create suffering and harm for yourself and others because you're swimming upstream. On the other hand, if you go with it, you allow transience, you allow change, you allow the bubbling compoundedness of experience, the second characteristic. And if you lighten up about the whole flow of experience, then don't take it so personally and try to control it and defend it and, you know, glamorize it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know, you feel a lot better in life and you're a lot easier to be around and all the rest of that. Okay? That's kind of the essence of Buddhism in a nutshell right there. Okay? Right, so we got that part. So now the perception track, especially the sensation track. Easy to overlook as we're flowing in everyday experience. And I want to call out a couple of points to you, and also do a couple of experiential experiments, and then see what you make of all this. All right? Okay. So, I think the famous saying, if I got it right, please correct me if I don't. What is it? Ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny. In other words, that the development of the fetus, and then the development further of the infant, toddler, preschooler, and beyond, tends to recreate the evolution of animals altogether. In other words, if you look at I don't know exactly how old it is. I got a few science teachers in the room here. You know, a fetus is roughly, I don't know what, a few weeks old, months old of a human. They look a lot like the fetus, roughly age comparable of a fish or a mouse or a pig, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In the same way, not to get too detailed about it, infants, when they're born, are full of sensation, much as a newborn mouse is full of sensation, or a newborn lizard or goldfish, full of sensation. And then gradually, as the weeks go by and the months and then even years, order is increasingly established in chaos, language starts coming forward, the thought track starts predominating, starts becoming very, very powerful. And then we have a three-year-old, and then the rest from there. So the point is that sensation and various aspects of it, including the sense of action, sensory motor processing in our psyches, built from the bottom up, are the foundation, much as in terms of the evolution of the brain, built from the bottom up, we have these ancient levels and layers that go all the way back to, jellyfish. We share 20% or so of our DNA, I'm told, with bananas. And we have even more, DNA that we share with little worms and lizards, mice and monkeys. So, if you just think about it, the foundation of the psyche, your psyche, right? You, broadly defined, right? You. The foundation is the body, sensory motor processing, sensation, first. Second, in ordinary experiencing, and you can really track this in these little experiments I'll do with you momentarily, you can realize that, wow, my lofty philosophies and ideas and views about things are enormously shaped by underlying somatic markers, very much built by our lived history, our lived experience. Growing up in our various families, shaped by the forces of culture, for better or worse, as adults, the things that happen to us, we're designed to, in some sense, remember, not in a conscious sense of recollected events, but the body remembers, as it were, somatic qualities that are the distillation of lived experience that are associated with various desires or situations or types of relationships or ideas. Okay? So becoming more and more aware of the somatic markers of your experience as it unfolds today can help you be much more at choice about what you're going to do about things. And also with growing insight can really help you relieve a lot of suffering. Because over time, as you become aware of these underlying somatic markers, you can realize that a lot of them are just the legacy of previous experiences. They don't need to be so powerful, so determinative today. They really don't. We can let go of them. And you can deliberately internalize new somatic markers, taking in the good, as it were, of the physical, sensate, somatic aspects of beneficial experiences, so you anchor them more and more inside you. So that over time, less and less do you need to do this deliberately, but more and more, your resting state, the underlying wallpaper of the mind, the underlying background experience of being you as you move forward, including in increasingly challenging circumstances as you increase your capacities, that background sense of you, that resting state, the wallpaper of mind, becomes increasingly peaceful, contented, and loved and loving. Okay, ready for a couple experiments? So I'm going to do some two contrasts, and I'm going to do it in terms of my model. Other people use it roughly as well, of three fundamental needs: safety, satisfaction, and connection, loosely related to the reptilian brainstem evolution, then mammalian subcortex, primate human cortex, very loosely and often metaphorically related. So here we go. With regard to safety, if you, well, without re-traumatizing yourself, touch it lightly. You know, bring to mind, think about something that worries you for about 20 seconds. It's okay. And by the way, being able to be a cause with something can help you not be at effect about with it. In other words, if you can cause worry, paradoxically, you can actually become freer from worry. Key point. So very lightly, bringing to mind something you're worried about. And then after you get into it, you know, 5, 10 seconds, 20 seconds maybe, start tuning into the body. What are the characteristic body sensations associated with that worry? Okay, yeah, you can do it. We'll do it quietly, then we'll talk about it in a minute, okay? But just be aware for yourself. If you have a word for them inside, that's cool. Or just simply know what they're like. Know what that track of the song of worry is like. Okay, that's all. Change the channel now. Okay, ready? Whoop! All right. Now, let's do another one. How about on the other side? I'm working with safety still here from my in my framework. How about the side on the plus side of the feeling of calm strength? The state of being of calm strength. Tuning into that, and then particularly knowing what the somatic track is like. And as a bit of a plus, you can take in the good, as it were, of this experience. Letting the felt sense of calm strength sink in. Feeling like it's settling into you as you settle into it. Establishing yourself more as calm strength for a breath. Okay. All right. So good. Now, kind of briefly, let's touch on what I think of as the satisfaction system, or having to do managed by approaching things, approaching rewards. Just for a moment, bringing to mind what it feels like to be driven toward a goal. I'm going red zone, green zone, red zone, green zone. I'm finishing on the green zone. So red zone, what's it feel like to be, I got to get this done. I'm going to finish my to-do list. Boy, is that an experience I know. Wait on, honey. I got to finish this email. You know, what's that feel like somatically? Driven toward a goal. Excuse me. Thank you. Okay. All right. Changing the channel? Green zone channel. The green channel. Now, what's it feel like to be grateful? Thankful for something? This is interesting because often gratitude naturally has a lot of conceptual, you know, activity. That track is big often, sort of ways of thinking about things. But often there, even with subtle experiences, there can be a somatic component. So gratitude. Also, you can take in the good of gratitude, particularly the somatic components for a breath. Okay. And then last, the social needs that we have, served through attaching in good ways, attaching to others in various ways. Just for a moment, kind of lightly, you know, thinking about what does it feel like to feel hurt or let down, particularly the somatic aspects of it. Okay, enough of that. A little of that goes a long way, probably. Okay, pulling out. Okay, we're pulling out. All right, okay, over to the green zone here, as it were. Okay, good. So now, let's just bring to mind, what does it feel like someone? To be in, particularly in kind of down-to-earth ways, to feel friendly. You know, just kind of, perhaps in a jokey way, or a very tender way, fond. Even loving, but especially just what's it feel like someone, including a pet. Pets are wonderful to like. Yeah. I like my fish. I say my very loosely. I don't possess them. They're sentient beings in their own right. But anyway, fish. Okay, liking. And then when you find that feeling of, you know, warm-heartedness and the somatic aspects of liking, again, taking a breath to receive these, to help install them a bit more in your own body. Okay. All right, come on back. Feel free to hang out in the green zone if you like as we keep going, another 10 minutes or so. So I'm just curious, what are some things you experienced? Some people were calling out words along the way, or number one, about somatic markers, the somatic track, as it were. And two, you know, what do you notice about you know, the possibility of being able to really internalize and register the somatic aspects of beneficial experiences, like beneficial experiences of calm strength or gratitude or fondness, warm-heartedness for others. Any comments, observations, insights, questions? Great.
In general, I noticed that the red zone feelings, I felt a tightness and a contraction.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I think, probably summarizes my experience very much, too. Thank you. And then back there, yeah.
Yeah, similarly, but I felt tension come up in certain parts of my body when I thought about certain things.
Yeah.
And when I was in the green zone, I started yawning and having like a somatic experience of relaxing.
Yeah, in a nice way. Yeah, the word pressure or tension, you know, the Four Noble Truths, as it were, you know, suffering, you know, caused in part by certain kinds of craving of various kinds. And I was talking with a friend of mine, James Barras, and a teacher at Spirit Rock, and he said, you know, for himself, one of the great markers of when he's in the, as it were, Second Noble Truth of craving is just tension or pressure. Pressure was a word used by a teacher on a retreat I went to. It was kind of a marker. And one of the nice things about becoming more aware of the somatic markers is you can be aware of when you're in a subtle state of the Second Noble Truth territory, red zone territory of craving, you know, resisting the unpleasant, chasing the pleasant, clinging to the heartfelt, or kind of getting deluded about what's neutral, in a nutshell. And a lot of times we're in a state of unnecessary craving. We don't really need to be that tense. We don't need to feel that pressured. We don't need to be so contracted in the body. And as we release that, we come more into the green zone. We can still deal with the issues, but on a different basis. Right? There is no end to trouble in this life. The question is, what's the basis upon which we deal with it? Yeah. All right. Okay, other comment? Yep. Back? Yep, please.
Yeah, it was interesting how just through your suggestion that it would induce completely different states in such a short duration.
Yeah.
That it's like, wow, I'm here, now I'm here. And how I go about the day in my day, and I don't think I have a choice like that.
Yeah.
And your brain, I was like,
Isn't that remarkable?
Yeah.
That we can be so easily and readily cued into a different state of being, or cue ourselves into a different state of being quite readily, you know? And it is interesting, sometimes people refer to doing practices as, you know, you're just manipulating yourself. And I say, so what? In other words, we're being manipulated all day long by all these various stimuli, including heavily stimulate that arise within our own selves, as the residues of lived experience, or just the residues evolutionarily of, you know, the menagerie, the zoo, living between our ears, as it were, right? All this stuff's bubbling up. It's manipulating us all day long. Why not be a little more skillful and self-aware about that process?
Yeah. Just the effect of our unconsciousness.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. It is very interesting. Okay, a couple other comments? Yeah.
I found in the red zone phases that I had this tingling in my body in various places, depending on where what we were looking at.
Yeah.
And then when we shifted to the green zone, I felt very grounded.
Oh, that's interesting.
I forgot that my feet were on the floor and my butt in the chair. Uh-huh. It was the red zone.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It was all like this buzziness.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, that's very. I got it. Thank you. Yeah, it's great. All right, yeah? Anybody? Great. Please, in the back.
Just a speed difference. The red zone sensations came very quickly, immediate.
Oh, that's,
and the green zone took a little longer for me to relax into. And,
yeah.
You know, a little bit of toe speed.
That is very interesting that you called that out. And I think that's, you know, a lot of what, to me, in a sense, this mindfulness territory is basically about a growing granularity of awareness. You know, in time scales, like we get more and more able to track rapid changes, granularity there, and we have more granularity in terms of the body altogether. We're more able to pick out sensation in different parts of the body, and also granularity in terms of depth of experience, and granularity in types of experience, or aspects of experience like speed. So first point. That's great. That's great noticing. And second, it speaks to the ways in which a little bit of neuropsychology can be very useful. A lot of it's not that relevant, but some of it is. The sympathetic nervous system, that wing of the autonomic nervous system, which is always trying to balance us, you know, and maintain a healthy equilibrium of one kind or another, that wing, which is useful for healthy passion, excitement, elation, or mobilizing strength to speak truth to power, what have you, but is also very involved in fighting or fleeing. That wing of the nervous system, the sympathetic wing, activates really quickly, has total speed, comes online, just like that, because that's what we need as first responders, as it were. Fast response to, you know, different conditions in terms of animal evolution and really harsh conditions, generally. On the other hand, the sympathetic nervous system, it takes more time to come online. You know, isn't it? Thank you. The parasympathetic, green zone, as it were, wing of the nervous system takes longer to come online. So that's one of the markers of it. It takes a little bit longer. It takes a little more deliberate. And we can lose it pretty quickly. Whereas sympathetic arousal, once you get that heart beating and you get that cortisol released, adrenaline released, it takes a while to metabolize it out of yourselves. We've probably all had the experience where we got alarmed about something and then discovered that it was really almost a joke, coast is clear. It wasn't a snake under the chair. It was just a, you know, I don't know what, a vine or something like that. But we still notice it 5 minutes later. We're kind of, and that's because it takes a while to clear that stuff out. But you can come out of a parasympathetic state, you know, usually very, very quickly, you know. So to me, the takeaway from that is to be very mindful of arousal. I think of it as the accelerator. I can feel it. I can feel I'm accelerating. And as soon as I notice I'm accelerating, like you're saying, the marker of contraction or pressure or tension, as soon as I can feel myself accelerating, I think yellow flag. So, okay, you can still go around the track, and maybe there's a place for that, but be a little careful, because once you're accelerating, it's really easy to flip into that red zone. You know, and then also the takeaway for me is to cultivate more green zone resting state, so it becomes more of our resting state, the thermostat setting of the body-mind system altogether, so we're more stabilized there. And keeping in mind that we can still maintain qualities of activation and energy and vitality while being fundamentally, you know, relaxed about it. I have this kind of tongue-in-cheek line I use, racing serenely. And it's not always an oxymoron, you know what I mean? And if you look at people who are really far along in their practice, they can be very, very active. And you can see that in the center of it all, it is completely still. Aspiration, right? Okay, moving to a wrap this evening. Anybody else? Any final comment or question? Yeah.
Well, I just want to mention the green zone that I got into when you said think of someone you like. Or
yeah.
I thought of the times I've fallen in love, and there's a dissolution of self almost.
Yeah.
Doesn't last forever. But yeah, there's no worries. There's the body's relaxed. There's no sense of ego. Goes away.
Yeah. I know there's... it's a beautiful way in a sense to end, you know. The sense of self, of course, may dissolve, but person, broadly defined, you know, the ongoingness of experience does continue, you know, first. But more deep, you know, deeply to your real point there, there's nothing like love. You know, including in this model that I and others use, love obviously addresses our, connection needs, but it's also highly rewarding. In terms of satisfaction needs, yeah, and as we're the little mouse inside, love is full of cheese, you know, right? And then also love, flowing in or flowing out, because love is love whether we're receiving it or giving it, which is so remarkable, is an incredibly primal signal of safety. You know, what does the scared child want to do? Crawl into her mommy's or daddy's or granny's lap. You know, or hug her doggy, or so kitty, or what have you. And so, man, I think of love as the ultimate medicine. Love is a multivitamin. You know, nothing like love to bring us home. So, and right there are somatic markers of love. I don't know about you, I'm feeling in my heart, my body, my diaphragm. You know, so I encourage you to be increasingly mindful of the somatic track of lived experience, of the song of experience, the symphony of experience, being aware of the somatic, you know, instruments there, the somatic track, and, you know, disengaging from red zone somatic experiences, not fighting it, because then you just worsen it, but disengaging from it, holding it in mindful awareness, defueling it. The Buddha focused a lot on what he called nutriments, or we might say today fertilizer. Not fertilizing fear, not fertilizing frustration, not fertilizing resentment. And also, in terms of the somatic track, when you're registering the somatic aspects of a beneficial experience, bring a big spoon. Really enjoy it. Really help it sink in as you sink into it. Okay? Including the mega medicine of all, love. So let's just sit with that for a minute and we'll finish tonight. Thank you. Enjoy your life. Really? See you next week.